C7. Number 20, B.
And if we take love and build really on the rudiments laid down in love, namely that love is a comprehensive whole, that love means to look at everything from the comprehensivist's point of view and not from the specialist's point of view, but from the comprehensivist's point of view, that we find as a new and higher sense of scientific understanding, we feel that problems become so transparent that they are no more problems. The moment we see something from the highest frame of, from the widest frame of reference, a detail becomes transparent and loses itself to the nature of being a problem. So the great secret is always, in scientific reasoning, is always to take the highest thinkable, the highest possible, the widest possible frame of reference and consider it from there. And not to consider the problem per se and say, how can I analyze the problem even in smaller parts, but just to go the other way around and take the problem and say the problem is only a part of a bigger whole, and from therefore try to solve that problem from a bigger whole. This is a terrific new insight that has come forth over the last 10 years or so in the philosophy of science, or in the what science is, that instead of taking a problem and analyzing the problem, we should do the very opposite. We should go the opposite way and say, this problem, I do not need to subdivide and analyze. This is already a part of a bigger one. So what is the bigger one? From the bigger frame of reference, usually that problem is then put into the proper light. Yes. That's that. We come to the chapter recapitulation. What is the great purpose of the chapter on recapitulation? This is quite an intriguing question. Very intriguing. Because it seems on first sight here are 24 different questions, 24 answers to these different questions. There doesn't seem to be any connection between these questions. One has never really considered how these questions are related to each other until John Dolly came and gave a kind of a answer to that. But up to that point, one considered really that chapter as a sum of atoms, a sum of isolated questions and answers. Is it this, or is it something else? If it's just a sum total of 24 isolated metaphysical propositions and answers, then it has no oneness innate in itself. Then it is really an atomistic presentation. Then that chapter is really a presentation of nice metaphysical aphorisms, of a lot of ontological truths, and that's that. But that would have nothing to do with the science, nor would it have anything to do with the oneness. Therefore, here the question is very pertinent. What on earth really means this chapter on recapitulation? Because in a way, I think it's very easy somehow to read those questions and the answers, and the answers are usually concise, they are not very long. They are stated so that one can understand the individual sentences. One reads that question, reads an answer of a half a page or so, and one feels, this is the answer, I have understood it. And one reads all of them and has a sense, I have understood it. Have I understood the chapter? This is my great question. Is there not something much bigger behind it than just this isolated treatment of isolated question and answers? Well, let's see if we find somehow another aspect, a bigger aspect than that. The 13th chapter on teaching was teaching us to be a Christian Scientist. Let us be a Christian Scientist, which means let us be an ethical scientist, namely a scientist that adheres to the principle of Christian Science. So all what was actually stated there was stating adhere to science, then you are no more a person, then you are a scientist. If I adhere to the principle of mathematics, then I am suddenly a mathematician. Then I am suddenly no more Max Kepler, then I am suddenly no more a Swiss, then I am suddenly no more, if I would be married, the husband and the father of a family. If I study a science, like mathematics, I am suddenly something else. I am a mathematician. I free myself from the personal sense of me, and the scientific sense of me comes forth more and more and more and takes over and becomes more and more important in my life. That is what Mrs. Eddy wanted to show with obstetrics, that is a part of the 13th chapter on teaching, showing that we should give birth to ourselves no more as a mortal, but to give birth to ourselves to be a scientist. That was the purpose of that whole paragraph on obstetrics, to give birth to the divine scientist in us, so that we see we are coming from divine science and not from a mystical God who created us, but that divine science brought us forth as a science, as a whole system of divine science, and that is our new nature. Then comes recapitulation and states a completely new proposition. I think what it states there is then, so to say, what is the content of this principle? What is then the content of this science, of which you are a scientist? What then makes up the whole structure and system of that science of which you are a scientist? And it seems to me as if recapitulation would teach that and would say, now, in the 13th chapter you have made up your mind to comply with the ethics, to adhere to the principle and the rule of science. And now I show you the whole inner system and structure of this science. The inner relationship of this science. Can you see, the 13th chapter was again, so to say, an approach to be a scientist. And now, when you are a scientist, you consider now the inner content of this science and ask, what is the inner content of this science? So that to let science interpret itself now through its own system, through its own system of ideas, so that science now interprets itself through its categories and classifications. So that we can see a science can never be without its system, that science and system is one, but we also see that science must have a system in order to express itself. Can you see? that science must have a Christ, or else that science does not express itself? What does it mean that science has a Christ? If we want to get away from a mystical sense of Christ, what is a Christ? A Christ is a healing agent, it's a healing way, the saving way, the problem-solving agent. That's the Christ in science. So that we can see a science without its system, a principle without its system, would have no Christ, would have no possibility to act as a problem-solving principle. If we just have the principle of mathematics and say there is a principle of mathematics, but do not know its system, we cannot demonstrate it. That principle does not lend itself then for solving the individual problems. Only when we know that principle through its system is it demonstrable, is it provable. Therefore, only when we know that system of the principle of Christian Science through the system of Christian Science is that principle demonstrable, applicable. It has a Christ. Can we see what we already were touching upon when we took the 10th chapter, where we say, well, every side of the holy city reflects every other side of the holy city. So we had there in the 10th chapter as the third side of the holy city Christianity at the point of idea, and we said, but if Christianity reflects the Christ, then ideas must have a Christ, or they would not reflect the second side. And so we came to the insight there, that not only God has a Christ, but that every idea has a Christ, and therefore every idea would be able to resolve its counterfeit. If we come now to the fourth side of the city, of science, we also must see that this fourth side of the city somehow reflects also the Christ. What is a Christ of a science? What is a Christ of a science? The system. The system is the new term for the Christ of a science. Because a science can only save and heal and solve and resolve problems through its system. Without that system, we could not calculate rightly. So can you see that therefore here we must somehow find that the chapter would show us the system. A system. And that's naturally what has never seen before John Dolly came. That chapter was always taken as what? As atomistic questions and answers, not as a system. You have never heard anybody explaining how these 24 questions and answers are related in a systematic way. So that if we would see the relationship of these questions and answers, that would really be the pith of the chapter and not what is stated black on white. That would only explain the various point of intersection of the system. But the system itself is not spelled out in words. The system itself is not spelled out on black and white. System is relationship. And relationships are never spelled out black and white. You see? If you have a text of Hamlet, you have only black and white statements. But the order, the trend of reasoning is really the relationship. And it's the order of reasoning within, from one sentence to the next, from one act to the next act, is really that which builds the story. But that is not spelled out black and white. And in the same way we have it here, that actually only then, when we understand the system, can we see the system in the whole chapter on recapitulation. And you know, I don't go into it. It's recapitulized in my structure book, and somewhere, somehow, John Dolly has also written about it. Not very much. He just has given the layout of recapitulation, and I have followed that layout. That layout is not my contribution. It's John Dolly's way of looking. That's not right what I say. It wasn't John Dolly's way of looking at recapitulation. It was the system's way of looking at recapitulation that he has made aware to us as students. This way I have put it right. We have become aware of it. And he has shown, you see, just to indicate it quickly, that there are 24 questions and answers. There are four groups of six questions and answers. The four groups are the first group, the Word, the second group, the Christ, third group, Christianity, fourth group, Science. Each time in six questions and answers, therefore each time showing it, half of it from the point of view of absolute Christian Science and half of them from the point of view of Christian Science, so that six are always split up in two threes, and each of the three is always reflecting the other side under consideration. So that we have here a system of presenting absolute Christian Science and Christian Science through the four sides of the Holy City. You have a wonderful interlocking of the four sides of the Holy City with the two levels of Christian Science and absolute Christian Science. That's how he presented it, and actually I think it was one of his masterpieces to see that, because I feel up to now, whatever I have read and studied of his writings, this would be that which I wouldn't have seen right away. The other presentation he gave from of the books of the Bible or of the platform or things like that seemed to be rather easy to detect, whereas what he detected in the chapter on recapitulation demanded a very refined and very practical and very spiritual sense of the four. But once one is made awake to it, one can see the terrific flow that flows from the first question and answer right through the second and the third. That's very easy. Then on to another level, again the fourth, fifth and sixth answer making up the word order and so on, is quite a thrill when one investigates it. And it cultures one's tonality of the matrix very much. The tonality, what is Word as Word, what is Word as Christ, what is Word as Christianity, what is Christ as Christ, what is Christ as Christianity, what is Christ as Word. It cultures that very much when one goes through it. So, can you see what he was trying to show? Or what the chapter tries to show is that here we have science not isolated from its Christ or its system, but science one with its system. Science brought out no more just as a principle of science and asking to adhere to the principle of science, like in the 13th chapter, but now it is different. It says, now I show you the inner relationship of that principle as a system, and therefore as a Christ side, the Christ aspect of science, therefore as that which you can use as a saving and solving activity. Yeah. A science that in the first question and answer, substitutes suddenly the mystical sense called God, the name God, through the scientific aspect of the seven, in the first question and answer, does away, so to say, with the undefined, indefinite sense of God, and puts at its place a scientific concept. There's also a way in this chapter, for the first time really and properly, with the name man. Here, for the very first time, she depersonalizes man. And from in here we find that man is no more he who is this and that and the other. Man is no more he that, he which. Here suddenly man takes on a new terminology, namely it's suddenly the compound idea, including all right idea. In this chapter, for the very first time, we find in the textbook the term compound idea. Can you see how long she was waiting to write over 450 or 60 pages to finally, so to say, let the cat out of the bag and say, look here, up to now I was still talking about man, but actually this is not right. Actually this man, she says, is only a name. But what is it really, or what is really behind it? It is a compound idea. It is a generic term for all that reflects God's image and likeness. You see, that has nothing to do anymore with the term man. All that reflects God's image and likeness is really under consideration. Yes, she even says it is actually the conscious identity of being as found in science. Suddenly we substitute the conscious identity as found in science for the term man. Can you see why we speak so little anymore about man? You know that we did take last week a whole week on the synonymous term and investigating the synonymous term, and we're practically never using the term man. I think we didn't hardly use the term man, if at all. And yet we felt that we were contemplating the conscious identity of being. We didn't feel we were left out. On the contrary, we felt now we are really in. We are really seeing that we don't have to think about man. We have just the conscious identity of being. It is here that she says that man is no more a he who, but a that which has no separate mind from God. It is therefore that which has that mind, which is the same mind as the mind of God. And we come right back, you see, to the oneness of being, where we start right out what is really the starting point, that we have the mind, which is the same mind as the mind of God. Therefore, there is only one mind. Therefore, there is only the conscious identity of the one mind, the one spirit, the one soul. That is what we should be interested in, and not asking what is man, who is he, how can we deal with man. Let's get rid of him. It's a name. Mrs. Eddy calls it a name. It's a family name for all ideas. Why should we always calculate with names instead of calculating with reality? It doesn't get us anywhere to calculate spiritually with names. It's that which has no separate mind from God. It's that which has not a single quality underived from deity. Did you Did you feel last week when we went through all the ideas of the seventh synonymous term that we were left out? That we had nothing to do with what we were thinking? Not at all. Huh? You were really finding your conscious identity because you dropped the term man, the concept man. And what you did was that you contemplated that which has not the single quality underived from God. Yeah? Didn't I lead you into the true realm? Away from that funny concept, man. So, here we have it. It's the conscious identity of being. Is that conscious identity of being an isolated idea? No, it is the compound idea. The compound idea. Is that compound idea just a chaotic compounding of ideas? Or is it a system of ideas? Has it classification in itself or not? Yes, huh? Yes. She builds up the whole chapter through the classifications and says, look here, if you want to know something about the conscious identity of being, you better think along categories and not along men. Yeah? That's the change. That's where we change. That's where our practice changes. There where our whole practical application of science changes. The atomistic approach is always, here is a patient, here is a man, here is a situation, what shall we do with that kind of problem? There is somewhere a God, and that God is terrific, and that is perfect, and that God is all right, he's good. How I'm going to put that God over to that thing called a problem and a man and so on. Can you see how you can drop that whole thing and say, this is the wrong approach. This is the wrong approach. The right approach is that we go out from a principle, but through its system, not through its man, and through its patients, and through its problems. It more or less says, think from principle, but not to men. Think along principle in categories. Think from principle along the category of word. Think along from principle along the category of Christ. Think along from principle along the category of Christianity. And go out from principle and think along the category of science. Then, little by little, you can combine that category of the world with a little touch of the Christ in it, a little touch of Christianity in it. Then you can go to the Christ and think along the Christ and put a little bit of a touch of the world in it, and of the Christ in it, the Christianity. Think along the system. That's the Christ of science. That's the Christ of science. Then we demonstrate the system. Then, can you see? Then we don't demonstrate the solving of some kind of a little problem. Then our demonstration is not demonstrating somewhere a kind of thing called man. We demonstrate the principle. Sorry, we demonstrate a system. If we demonstrate the system, everything is included in it. What do? When we demonstrate arithmetic, we demonstrate if you analyze your thought, you demonstrate your categories. A problem stated to you, the very first thing you do is to go back to the principle of arithmetic. When you are there, you reason out first in a category. You just first ask yourself, has it to do with addition, or has it to do with subtraction, or has it to do with multiplication, or with division, don't you? You don't start writing and say, I add if the whole thing has to do with division. You first think along the categories. Huh? Can you see? And only when you think correctly along first the categories, and always about the categories, with every new step you make in that calculation, always go first along a category, you can solve the problem. Otherwise, you can't. Can you see what it means? This is recapitulation. It recapitulates the whole gamut of problem and everything into a system. And says, think along system, along categories. Isn't it terrific? The change of consciousness, the change of attitude which we get here. It's terrific. I make a break.